Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. Let's continue now with our regular series of conversation with members of Massachusetts' congressional delegation who today are considering President Obama's formal request to authorize military action against the terrorist group that calls itself the Islamic State. In just a few minutes, the president will be making a statement about this, which we plan to bring to you live. But one of the lawmakers who will vote on this war powers request is Congressman Stephen Lynch. He represents the 8th Congressional District, and he joins us now from Washington. Congressman Lynch, good to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Good to be with you, Anthony. Thank you.
Yeah, and I just wanted to, as you know, and you'll understand, we're waiting for the president to speak. So as soon as he walks up to the podium, I'm going to unceremoniously pull away from this interview. But in the meantime, I'd love to talk to you a little bit about it. First of all, what's your reaction? What do you think of the president's request for the authorization of military force, which he describes in a letter to you and your fellow members of Congress as a limited use of force?
Well, I did get a chance to look at the president's request this morning. I would say at once that it is expansive. It identifies ISIL as the entity that is the target of the military force, which means he's asking at least for authorization to have the option to use ground troops in both Iraq and Syria. So, territorially, it's fairly expansive. And again, there's no limitation on the size of the force. He does use a term, enduring combat. He'll limit it from enduring combat operations. However, there's no definition of what that might be, other than the fact that the authorization would only last for 3 years, which...
Yeah, Congressman, we've got a couple of details here. He's asking Congress to authorize, as you said, a 3-year military campaign, but it would avoid a large-scale invasion. Instead, it would allow limited combat operations, such as rescue operations or the deployment of special operation forces, perhaps against Islamic State leadership. So it sounds like they're trying to make a case, the White House, that this is limited. Sounds like you have some concerns, though, about just...
Well, it doesn't have a size limit in the legislation. I can only go by what the authorization says, literally. There is no, just so you're clear, you know, they keep saying limited, but that's not what they're asking me to vote on.
Right.
Okay? So there's no, and rescue operations, this is clearly far beyond that. Just to be clear, Anthony, this is for combat operations, but they won't be enduring. That's what the president's saying. So it's boots on the ground. He wants that option. He wants the ability to send them into Iraq and send them into Syria as well, and wherever ISIL operates. So it's very expansive.
And is that a concern to you? Are you concerned about that?
I would oppose that. I would oppose that. Look, we have just come through 10 years in Iraq. From 2003 to 2013, the American taxpayer spent $25 billion training and equipping 938,000 Iraqis, and at the first sign of opposition from 35,000 ISIL insurgents, the bulk of them turned and ran. So now we're going back, and the president wants the ability to put American sons and daughters on the line to do the fighting that we just spent $25 billion training 938,000 Iraqis to do. They're not stepping up. And look, I've been to Iraq now 14 times, recently up to the Syrian border to look at what the Syrian opposition might present in terms of a competent fighting force. You know, the Iraqis have not stepped up, and so far what's going on in the Syrian border, the so-called Free Syrian Army is very low in the power rankings of the forces in that region. So I would say that this is a terrible idea for us to put our people in there to do this fighting on behalf of the Iraqi people. That is a never-ending enterprise if you're going to do that.
Congressman, let me ask you this, because as you know, a campaign of airstrikes against that group, ISIS, has been underway for the past 6 months. The Obama administration argues that it doesn't need congressional authority to continue its military campaign. Clearly it wants...
Then why is he asking?
Well, the rest of my question was clearly they want it, I gather, to bolster the legitimacy with support from Congress. But do you think the president needs congressional authorization?
I think he does, and I think he should.
Yeah.
I think he should ask for it. But I don't think it should be open-ended. I don't think it should be U.S. boots on the ground from day one. We just, as I said, we just completed this whole program where over 4,000 U.S. forces were killed and 20,000 and some odd wounded. And now after we've spent the $25 billion to train the Iraqis and they don't show up, and there's 938,000 of these trained individuals for military, border security, and police, and now we're just gonna forget all that, and we're gonna put our own people back on the line. I just
well, what would you recommend, Congressman? I mean, would you recommend absolutely no action against ISIL, or would you be more comfortable with a more limited approach? And if so, how would that be framed?
Well, why don't we use empirical evidence? Why don't we look at what's worked? We were able to take back Mosul Dam using U.S. air power with Kurdish forces that were willing to fight. We were able to take back Kobani using U.S. air power, also other air power. We used French, Jordanian, but we used Kurdish land forces that were willing to fight. That's the key here. As long as the Iraqis are not willing to fight, I think it's foolhardy for us to put U.S. forces down there. That would require an occupation for us to maintain stability there. To what end? Yeah. If they're not willing to step up, it would be a never-ending occupation for us to do that. And the situation worsens when you start looking at Syria. To put the moderate Syrian forces and their political cohorts in power in Syria, we would not only have to take out Bashar al-Assad, we would also have to take out Hezbollah, we would have to take out Jabhat al-Nusra, we would have to take out probably three or four other militant forces that are more powerful and have a wider base of support than the folks that we are supporting in this so-called moderate Syrian army. They are not so moderate, and yeah, I'm afraid they're not so competent either as a fighting force. And I've met with them several times. I wish they were in a better position. I wish
Congressman, I'm just going to jump in because I just want to let you know that the president is going to probably begin talking in about a minute.
I get a lot of that, so I'm not bothered.
Okay, but in the minute that remains, let me ask you this question. General David Petraeus said during the Iraq War, "Tell me how this ends." Meaning, what's the end goal here? Have you heard in the letter from the president to Congress an articulation of what exactly the administration is trying to achieve by the use of military force? Have they set out concrete goals, in other words?
In the past, I don't know what the new iteration is. In the past, the argument has been we need to create some space and some time for the Iraqis to take control. Well, we have done that, but they have not shown up. So, and General Petraeus, I had a chance to meet with him a few months ago in Turkey. He knows better than anyone. He's the one that led the training operation in Iraq. They're the ones that are going to have to be responsible here, and I think it is foolhardy for us to put more American sons and daughters into a fight that really we have already trained and equipped, like I say, almost a million Iraqis to do this job. So, I don't think we should do this. This is not in pursuit of a coherent policy.
Well, I know that there are other Democrats like you in Congress that share your concern. On the other hand, there are some Republicans who are concerned that this request would be too constricting to military commanders. And while some Democrats are concerned, like you, that the authorization would give the president too much power.
Today, as
we are going right now to President Obama speaking at the White House.
Arab countries. Our men and women in uniform continue the fight against ISIL in Iraq and in Syria. More than 2,000 coalition airstrikes have pounded these terrorists. We're disrupting their command and control and supply lines, making it harder for them to move. We're destroying their fighting positions, their tanks, their vehicles, their barracks, their training camps, and the oil and gas facilities and infrastructure that fund their operations. We're taking out their commanders, their fighters, and their leaders. In Iraq, local forces have largely held the line and in some places have pushed ISIL back. In Syria, ISIL failed in its major push to take the town of Kobani, losing countless fighters in the process, fighters who will never again threaten innocent civilians. And we've seen reports of sinking morale among ISIL fighters as they realize the futility of their cause. Now, make no mistake, this is a difficult mission, and it will remain difficult for some time. It's going to take time to dislodge these terrorists, especially from urban areas. But our coalition is on the offensive. ISIL is on the defensive, and ISIL is going to lose. Its barbaric murders of so many people, including American hostages, are a desperate and revolting attempt to strike fear in the hearts of people it can never possibly win over by its ideas or its ideology, because it offers nothing but misery and death and destruction. And with vile groups like this, there is only one option. With our allies and partners, we are going to degrade and ultimately destroy this terrorist group. And when I announced our strategy against ISIL in September, I said that we are strongest as a nation when the President and Congress work together. Today, my administration submitted a draft resolution to Congress to authorize the use of force against ISIL. I want to be very clear about what it does and what it does not do. This resolution reflects our core objective to destroy ISIL. It supports the comprehensive strategy that we've been pursuing with our allies and our partners. A systemic and sustained campaign of airstrikes against ISIL in Iraq and Syria, support and training for local forces on the ground, including the moderate Syrian opposition, preventing ISIL attacks in the region and beyond, including by foreign terrorist fighters who try to threaten our countries, regional and international support for an inclusive Iraqi government that unites the Iraqi people and strengthens Iraqi forces against ISIL, humanitarian assistance for the innocent civilians of Iraq and Syria who are suffering so terribly under ISIL's reign of horror. I want to thank Vice President Biden, Secretaries Kerry and Hagel, and General Marty Dempsey for their leadership in advancing our strategy. Even as we meet this challenge in Iraq and Syria, we all agree that one of our weapons against terrorists like ISIL, a critical part of our strategy, is the values we live here at home. One of the best antidotes to the hateful ideologies that try to recruit and radicalize people to violent extremism is our own example as diverse and tolerant societies that welcome the contributions of all people, including people of all faiths. The resolution we've submitted today does not call for the deployment of U.S. ground combat forces to Iraq or Syria. It is not the authorization of another ground war like Afghanistan or Iraq. The 2,600 American troops in Iraq today largely serve on bases. And yes, they face the risks that come with service in any dangerous environment, but they do not have a combat mission. They are focused on training Iraqi forces, including Kurdish forces. As I've said before, I'm convinced that the United States should not get dragged back into another prolonged ground war in the Middle East. That's not in our national security interest, and it's not necessary for us to defeat ISIL. Local forces on the ground who know their countries best are best positioned to take the ground fight to ISIL, and that's what they're doing. At the same time, this resolution strikes the necessary balance by giving us the flexibility we need for unforeseen circumstances. For example, if we had actionable intelligence about a gathering of ISIL leaders, and our partners didn't have the capacity to get them, I would be prepared to order our special forces to take action, because I will not allow these terrorists to have a safe haven. So we need flexibility, but we also have to be careful and deliberate. And there's no heavier decision than asking our men and women in uniform to risk their lives on our behalf. As Commander-in-Chief, I will only send our troops into harm's way when it is absolutely necessary for our national security. Finally, this resolution repeals the 2002 authorization of force for the invasion of Iraq and limits this new authorization to 3 years. I do not believe America's interests are served by endless war or by remaining on a perpetual war footing. As a nation, we need to ask the difficult and necessary questions about when, why, and how we use military force. After all, it is our troops who bear the costs of our decisions, and we owe them a clear strategy and the support they need to get the job done. So this resolution will give our armed forces and our coalition the continuity we need for the next 3 years. It is not a timetable. It is not announcing that the mission is completed at any given period. What it is saying is that Congress should revisit the issue at the beginning of the next president's term. It's conceivable that the mission is completed earlier. It's conceivable that after deliberation, debate, and evaluation, that there are additional tasks to be carried out in this area. And the people's representatives, with a new president, should be able to have that discussion. In closing, I want to say that in crafting this resolution, we have consulted with and listened to both Republicans and Democrats in Congress. We've made a sincere effort to address difficult issues that we've discussed together. In the days and weeks ahead, we'll continue to work closely with leaders and members of Congress on both sides of the aisle. I believe this resolution can grow even stronger with the thoughtful and dignified debate that this moment demands. I'm optimistic that it can win strong bipartisan support and that we can show our troops and the world that Americans are united in this mission. Today, our men and women in uniform continue the fight against ISIL, and we salute them for their courageous service. We pray for their safety. We stand with their families who miss them and who are sacrificing here at home. But know this, our coalition is strong, our cause is just, and our mission will succeed. And long after the terrorists we face today are destroyed and forgotten, America will continue to stand free and tall and strong. May God bless our troops, and may God bless the United States of America. Thank you very much, everybody.
President Obama speaking at the White House, laying out his case that Congress should authorize military action against the terrorist group that calls itself the Islamic State. The president said, make no mistake, ISIL is going to lose. He said his resolution is aimed at destroying ISIL by going after members of its leadership, as well as providing humanitarian support for people on the ground in Iraq and Syria. He's asking Congress to authorize a 3-year military campaign that would avoid a large-scale invasion, he said. Instead, it would allow limited combat, such as rescue operations or the deployment of special operations forces against Islamic State leadership. It does not call, he said, the president said, for ground forces, American ground forces in Iraq and Syria. It does not commit, he said, America to another prolonged ground war. He also said the authorization would repeal an authorization to go to war in Iraq that Congress approved in 2002. And he also said in crafting this resolution, he's listened to both Democrats and Republicans and looks forward to a debate in Congress. Joining me now in the studio is Jim Walsh. He's an international security expert with MIT's Security Studies program. Jim, thanks so much for coming in. We appreciate it.
Good to be with you.
Well, as we just heard, President Obama there asking Congress to authorize U.S. military action against the Islamic State. First of all, just your quick response to it. It seems like he was making a case that this would be limited. There was constraints he talked about. How limited? What kind of restraints did you hear?
Well, I went back and I reread the 2001 authorization, which was the against al-Qaeda, and the 2002 authorization for the invasion of Iraq. I would say by comparison, this is much more limited. It has a 3-year window on it. Those other two resolutions did not. And also as a proscription against enduring offensive combat operations, something that the earlier two resolutions did not. And then, of course, you heard the president say in his remarks that he doesn't want to have a perpetual war for the U.S. to be on perpetual war footing. I think, Anthony, the thing here is we want to separate two different things. One is fighting in Syria, fighting in Iraq, a good idea or a bad idea? There's going to be a debate about that. There's a second separate question, which is the process for how we go forward. Right now, you know, as the president said, we've had over 1,000 airstrikes. 1,000 airstrikes. We are, you know, in operations against ISIL in these countries. And so at some point, the U.S. and the American public should weigh in on that and then have that debate about whether it's a good idea or a bad idea.
Well, he's going to certainly have that debate in Congress and across the nation. But let me ask you about that, because as you mentioned, this air campaign has been going on for a while. The White House has argued that it doesn't need this resolution. resolution, congressional authorization, that is. So why is he doing this?
Well, every president who ever seeks an authorization always says that. That's sort of code, if you're in the biz, that's code for protecting presidential prerogatives, because it's the executive branch versus the legislative branch, and, you know, it's the president wants to maintain his power for future presidents who come after him. So they say that, but it's in the president's political interest to be able to say, look, I have a unified country behind me, Democrats and Republicans, and frankly, I don't think it's driven by this, but frankly, if he does win a resolution, that probably improves his political standing as well.
And do you think he'll get it? You know, before the president spoke, I know you were in here listening, we were talking to Congressman Stephen Lynch, a Democrat from Boston. He had a look at the president's request for this authorization, and he raised big concerns and talked about, do we really want to, be involved in a sort of an open-ended war on the ground in that part of the world? That's the way Stephen Lynch read it. And I gather there are other members of Congress that feel the same way.
I think so. I do think, though, that this authorization, as authorizations go, is narrowly drawn. I think it's sort of hard to avoid that if you read it. Mm-hmm. It does say no enduring offensive operations. Now, some of those words are wiggle words, but it says it in a way that no other authorization has said it. And it takes out as the president indicated, would remove the 2002 authorization. I think what we see here is the trailer for a debate between Republicans who are going to say the president isn't asking for enough, mm-hmm. and some Democrats who's saying he's asking for too much. I think, think back 2 years ago, I guess it was in the fall, when the president was seeking authorization of military force against Syria's chemical weapons program. And I don't remember the polling at the time, but there was a sense that there was great reticence about that. And I'm sure we'll see new polling coming out. But my sense is completely unscientific, that the mood of the U.S. has changed somewhat on these issues following beheadings, following the attacks in Paris, following, a number of different things. I'm not saying they're going to run and embrace this, but I do sense that the temperament has changed over time.
It's interesting that you mentioned that, because, of course, this proposal goes to Congress shortly after the confirmation of the death of Kayla Mueller, a 26-year-old American held by the Islamic State. He specifically mentioned her in the resolution. He didn't do that today, just now, but in the resolution he specifically mentioned her, as well as three other Americans executed by the Islamic State, James Foley, Stephen J. Sotloff, and Peter Kasich, justifying the need for military action. So you think that will help make the case to lawmakers?
I think it adds to the mood, the public's mood. I will say this, and I let me put my cards on the table. I have some skepticism about involvement in Syria. I really do. Mm-hmm. But again, I think these are separate issues, whether it's a good idea or a bad idea or how we handle it. And that's what we're talking about now, how to handle it. I will say the other surprising thing about this resolution, to its credit, compared to the other resolutions, is it doesn't come out and say, ISIL is a direct threat to the United States. Those earlier two resolutions were all about how we'd faced an unprecedented danger from Iraq. That's not, none of that is in that. It's a much more tempered framing of the threat we face, and really the most of it being in the region. So, yes, I think the emotions around these attacks will play into that, but I don't see the president sort of going to the bully pulpit and saying, we are facing giant threats. We need to react strongly.
Right. This isn't George W. Bush after 2000, after 9/11, basically talking about an existential threat to the United States.
Exactly. And in that way, it stands out as being very different.
I want to ask you about this. As we've discussed, the proposed legislation would repeal the 2002 authorization to invade Iraq, but it leaves in place other legislation from 2001 allowing military force against al-Qaeda. Is that a problem in your view?
Yeah, I just don't believe that you should have open-ended authorizations of military force that go on forever. Right. I personally just have a problem with that, as a principle. The president has said, or at least some in the White House have said, they would like to revisit that authorization, continue it, but put some limits on it in the way that they're putting limits here. But my guess is that's going to be a conversation for the future, not in the near term.
Well, Jim Walsh is an international security expert at MIT's Security Studies program. He was talking about President Obama's request to Congress that it authorize military action against the terrorist group that calls itself the Islamic State. There'll be a lot more on this coming up on All Things Considered just ahead. Jim Walsh, thank you very much for coming in. We're very grateful.
Thank you.
And listeners, that's it for today. Radio Boston is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Anthony Brooks. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.